my hand and smoothed the hair from her face. You will be fine on the other world. You are strong. They are following him. They don't care about us anymore. I can wait here and Father will find me. He's close. Tears streamed down the girl's face now, but she wasn't sobbing. No, Vyarathi. You need to do this for me. If I know you are safe, I can focus on this task. The Obarni probably don't even know how powerful an ovule is. They may have them sitting forgotten on shelves. It will be easy. I will never see you again if you make me leave. I will never see my father. Please, just let me come with you. The words choked out of her, and I felt my own tears begin to pour down my face like warm rain. Nonsense. I'll get the ovule, my love. Nothing can keep us apart. I wrapped my arms around her and pulled her face into my chest. She fit perfectly there, and I realized that the last 12 years traveling with her were filled with more joy than fear, and more laughter than sadness. My daughter was the best parts of me and Kair, and I loved her with a ferocity that pained me. "They will kill you," she screeched into my chest while she squeezed my arms. "They will capture you, and I will never see you again. Please believe me, I know what will happen." Her words chilled me. I pulled the girl into me and inhaled the fragrance of her hair. "Even if they kill me, I will know you are safe. That is all that matters to me. That is all I have cared about since the moment I laid eyes on you, my darling. That is why I taught you how to survive, hide, hunt, fight, and be strong." I pushed her away from my chest to look at her beautiful face. "Do not argue with me anymore. I love you beyond words, Vyarathi. Do you know how much I love you?" She nodded through her sobs and raised a hand to wipe the tears from her green eyes. "Of course, you tell me all the time." She smirked through her tears, and I laughed a little in spite of the heaviness in my heart. "You will wait for me on the other side. You said there was a valley near this radical?
It is west of the mountain range. Please do not leave me, Mother. I am scared to be without you."
The girl's admittance of fear almost made me reconsider my choice. She had never been a coward, and I wondered if her prediction about my fate was correct. All of her other predictions had come true. "You know how to survive, my beautiful Vyarathi. It won't take me more than a few months to return. Then we can be together. Nothing will stop me from seeing you again." The girl nodded, but her sobs continued, and I knew my words did not reassure her.
"Mistresses,"
a voice said from the ground next to us. I had forgotten about the old elven ward until he spoke from his prostrated position.
"There might be a solution,"
he said before I could extract punishment for interrupting the moment I was sharing with my daughter.
"You can travel to another radical, but sleep until someone speaks your name and activates an ovule to receive you. That way the human can leave first, and my mistress can retrieve her when she follows."
"I can just sleep? What does that mean?"
"The magic will preserve your life and body while you frolic amongst the stars and endless islands of creation, as if you are dreaming. It won't last forever, but 100 years will seem only a day to your physical form."
"I choose that option," Vyarathi said.
"No. What if your prediction is right and the Obarni do kill me? Then you will never awaken." I shook my head and sighed.
"That is why you should take me with you,"
the girl tried to argue again, but I frowned and fixed my stare on her. She knew my decision had been made, and the tears began to flow. I wrapped my arms around her, and we did not speak for many minutes. The pain filled my chest, and I felt as if I could not breathe. I didn't want this. I wanted her to stay with me, but it would put her in peril. Stealing an ovule from the Obarni would be a dangerous endeavor, and I did not want to risk the one I loved. She would be safer in this new world where there were no Obarni to chase her. I owed her that protection, at least. The girl was innocent of any of the atrocities that her father and I had inflicted upon each other in this poor world. If this was the correct decision, then why couldn't I let go of her? Why couldn't I keep from crying? Why did I still fear for her? I wished we could have embraced for days, but I knew our time was short. I couldn't show her my fear. I couldn't tell her that we might not see each other again. I couldn't let her know that I was willing to send her away because her life was worth 1,000 of mine. Instead, I needed to be strong so that Vyarathi would know that this was the correct decision. The Obarni would come to this place soon, and I wanted my daughter safe before the murderers arrived. They would extort information from the old elven, but I could not kill him. "What do I need to know about this place when I return?" I asked the elven warden. He stood up to his feet with a slow, pained motion and then touched the ovule again. The dot on the wall glowed a little brighter than the other intersections and lines that ran alongside it.
"She has selected Seed World 487-7639. It is an older world, and the humans have only multiplied to a hundredth of its density."
4877639. I repeated the number aloud, and then in my head, until it was memorized. "Are all the worlds numbered?"
"The last two digits are the radicals on the world."
"Is there anything else I can say to beseech you, Mother?"
Vyarathi asked. I turned to look at her, and my heart almost gave out on me.
"No, my love. I will send you to this world and see you in a few months."
I forced a smile to my face and tried to choke back my tears. I'm expecting to see a home already built, with an orchard, garden, fishing spot, and some cattle ready for me. Will you complete those tasks before I come?
"Yes, Mother."
The girl nodded and her jaws set. I wanted to hug her one more time, and I did. Then I leaned my face down and kissed her forehead. "I love you, daughter." My stomach flipped a dozen times, and I had to force my jaw tight so that I did not sob. Why couldn't there have been two ovules in this place? I was surely cursed by the dead gods.
"I love you, Mother. I will see you again someday."
She began to cry, and I fought against my desire to keep her by my side. It would be too dangerous to make the journey to the human cities with her. I already traveled slower because of Vyarathi's age, and I did not want to put her in jeopardy. The idea of her staying here or even returning to Rel'Yadar's valley was also foolish, especially after she pulled down my hood a few days ago. The Obarni were probably only a few hours behind us now, and I needed to make a quick escape if I wanted to put distance between us.
"Did you hear that noise?" Vyarathi asked.
"No." I spun to the door and readied my bow.
"Voices?"
"I did not hear anything," I whispered, and the three of us were silent for dozens of seconds.
"We should get away from here,"
Vyarathi whispered. "No, you go through the radical." I turned toward the girl and then nodded at the ovule.
"Won't you check on the noise?" she asked.
I nodded and then crept out of the chamber and into the other rooms where the stone beds lay in their perfect order. I heard nothing, so I moved out of the temple and took 100 steps up the rocky slope. The green glow of the place almost faded against the inky blackness of the caverns. Vyarathi must have been mistaken. I spent another minute listening, and then returned to the rock-embraced tower. When I walked into the room again, fear clawed at my stomach, and I realized that I had made a mistake. "Where is she?" I asked the elven man. He was meandering around as if he was trying to get some slow exercise.
"Greetings, mistress. Did you bring an ovule?"
His stone face split into a smile. "I've been gone for 5 minutes. Where is my daughter?"
"Your daughter?"
He tilted his head and the smile changed to an expression of puzzlement. "The girl I was with. You just spoke to us about the ovule and the radical?" I tasted the rotten panic in my mouth. I knew what he was going to say. Vyarathi lied about hearing something, and I stupidly bought the story.
"She is sleeping in between the worlds. Once you journey to 487-7639, you can bring her the rest of the way."
"No!" I growled at the man, and my vision spun.
"Mistress, that is how she used the ovule."
"You fucking asshole!" I wanted to punch his face until his skull turned into pudding. Why didn't you stop her?
I cannot stop my masters. I am here to assist all who wish to travel.
He looked around the room, and his voice picked up the song he had sung earlier. Is there anything I can do? I grabbed his shoulders, and though I wanted to break him into pieces, I only gently shook the ancient elven. I needed him alive.
Where would you like to travel, mistress? Do you have an ovule? This one is empty of power.
No, I want my daughter to fucking live, you piece of shit! I screamed.
Your daughter?
He looked puzzled. Damn it. I let go of him and felt my legs give out. Damn it! I heard my voice say again. Then I only heard my soft sobs and the sound of my tears splashing into the cold stone floor. If I did not find an ovule, Biorothi would be lost forever.
Chapter 40 The O'Barney. The dragon-armored warriors finished lifting Iola Rothi to the metal cross. They secured her with a rope, then chain. The crowd of gathered humans and O'Barney screamed so loud that I wanted to cover my ears and push my face into the ground. I could not escape. My arms were chained together, and I knew that if I moved even a few inches from my spot beside Malik, one of the guards next to us would beat me again. My mind screamed against my skull, and I struggled to find any sort of solution. All the years of running, hiding, and fighting with my people amounted to this. All the years of chasing Iola Rothi were for naught. I could not tear my eyes from the men that leaned down to the wooden pile beneath my love and lit the logs aflame with their magic. "Stop this, Malik," I begged my friend. My heart was pounding in my chest, and I felt as though it would rip through my ribs. Tears stung my eyes, and a colossal headache slammed into my skull. "It is too late, Kyre." He did not look at me, but I could sense the emotion in his voice. He may not have wanted this, but now the course was set. The pile of wood was 5 feet high, but it was catching quickly, and the orange fire began to lick the bottoms of Iola Rothi's feet, her soft, beautiful feet. I could almost feel the heat from the pyre when the wind changed direction and blew toward me. Her silver eyes met mine from across the empty stage of the barracks. They were filled with nothing but adoration. She should have hated me. She should have been cursing me for what I had done to her people, for what was happening to her, for allowing it. I was cursing myself, but I only saw love in her eyes. Her mouth opened to speak, but the cries of the gathered O'Barney drowned out her words. She spoke again, urgently, her eyes boring into mine, just as they had when we made love. The screams of joy around me were so deafening that I could not even hear my own heartbeat. They compounded the pain in my head, and I found myself screaming as well. The flames were taller. They flickered and danced up to my lover's waist. Her hair blew along with another gust of wind, and it was suddenly impossible to tell the difference between Iola Rothi's red mane and the flames that were seconds away from devouring her entirely. "No," I shouted, and my vision blurred. I could not take my eyes away from hers. I saw her feet and legs began to char and blacken beneath the fire that consumed her lower body. Iola Rothi screamed, and it was louder than any thunder I had ever heard. Her anguish screeched to the heavens, and it cut through the cheers of the thousands of O'Barney as if they were only whispering. The crowd grew silent, and her scream continued with a chilling and horrific crescendo. She screamed my name. Her beautiful body burst into flames, and the wail reached the apex of suffering. I wanted to put my hands to my head so that my aching brain would have some sort of relief, but the cries of anguish could not be silenced. I was screaming with her. I felt her die, but her screams did not cease. Neither did mine. I was beyond grief, beyond despair, and beyond caring about anything else now. They killed the woman I loved, and now these fucking mortals would pay. I hated them all. The chains that bound my wrists seemed to disintegrate into dust when I looked at them. The guards at my side were crouched on the ground with their hands cupped to their ears, their mouths opened to scream, and blood flowed from between their fingers. I stepped toward the nearest one, the one who had punched me in the face, and drove my own fist through his skull like it was a rotted melon. Malik moved to grab his sword, but he was ridiculously slow, and I delivered a punishing side kick to his stomach before his hand could close around the hilt of his weapon. His body bent around my foot like a tree branch. I heard dozens of bones in his ribs and spine crack against the power of my attack. I had swords in my hands now. One was Malik's, the other belonged to the guard I just murdered. I cut the remaining guards around me into four pieces each. They did not have time to scream. Alexia managed to pull her swords out in time to parry my first attack. Her weapons and Malik's were both crafted of the same amazing metal as our armor, and both of the blades cried out with a shower of blue sparks. I heard a snap, and Alexia's eyes opened with surprise. The blade had not broken, but her elbow had snapped from the force of blocking my blow. She brought up her other blade to block my next strike, but just like Malik, she was too slow, and my other sword drove into her chest to the hilt. Perhaps I meant to miss her heart. Perhaps she twisted out of the way at the last second. Either way, her back arched against the impaling blade, and I heard her lungs fill with blood. "You will all die." It did not sound like my voice, but it came from my throat, and my mouth formed the words. Alexia choked out a bloody gasp, and then the wind pushed through me. Magic shot the woman's impaled body from me like an arrow. She flew backward, across the bottom of the courtyard, and smashed into 20 seated Obarni in the wooden stands 100 yards behind where we stood. The pyre burned with the heat of a desert sun, but I could not tell if Iolarothi still screamed her death note, or if the memory of it was only echoing in my head. It mattered little. I still heard it in my mind, and I felt every part of my body fill with the endless power of my rage. The three guards who had set fire to Iolarothi's pyre sprinted toward me with their weapons ready. The first one I cleaved in twain where his armpits met his raised shoulders. His top half spun away in a shower of blood, and his legs continued to run for a dozen steps behind me. The second dragon-armored warrior swung his blade at me from his right side with a quick vertical cut. I blocked his blow with the edge of Malik's sword where the hilt met the blade, and a shower of blue sparks exploded into the air between us. My right hand reached up and clutched the man's neck where his helmet ended at the chain around his throat. Then I ripped the water out of him. He screamed, and his skin turned gray before his body turned into a statue of ash. Then the armor fell to the ground in a pile of white powder of bones and skin. The warrior's life filled my own body, and all of my senses suddenly grew exponentially more powerful. The colors were vivid. I could see the thousands of different shades of orange flame that consumed Iolarothi's body. They danced around the wood and her charred figure like lovers seeking attention. Some of the fire matched the exact shade of her hair as it gave up the last fragments of its strands to feed the blaze. I could hear the tens of thousands of Obarni heartbeats gathered around me. Their breaths caught when they saw me slaughter their fellows, and I could almost count the number of weapons being pulled from their sheaths. Most of them screamed to kill me. The ones who weren't screaming had already leapt down from the stands and were running across the ground toward me in a tidal wave of muscle and hate. One of the dragon-armored warriors remained, poised to strike at me. The soldiers behind her sprinted toward us. The woman thrust the point of her sword toward my chest, but I flicked it away with the outside of my right hand, and then slammed Malik's finely crafted sword into her skull from above. There was too much power inside of my body. It felt wonderful when combined with the hate I bore toward these people. I wanted all of them to die. I wanted all of them to roast on the fire like Iolarothi. I wanted to end their existence as I had ended the Elven's. The charging warriors exploded into a green and purple flame. The magic did not even need to spew forth from my hands. I simply wished them gone, and my hate made it so. Instantly. I stood at the bottom of her pyre. The flames had consumed her, and they swirled toward the heavens like the tower of a radical. The endless wave of Obarni closed in around me like a rising tide. Despite my power and the rage I yearned to unleash upon them, I knew I could not stand against them all. I stepped into the fire. The wood was charcoal now. It snapped and popped beneath my bare feet. My skin burned and bubbled. The pain seared against my anger and danced in my brain until the world was only red and orange and vermilion and gold. The Obarni stopped at the foot of the pyre. Thousands of eyes looked up at me in a mixture of horror, disbelief, and disappointment. Each of them sought the glory of being the one to end me. I would take this from them with the very fire they intended for me all along. Then, the pain stopped. I was still awash in flame. I was still covered in the ash of my burning skin, but the flames and the heat were not damaging me. The heat was power. The heat was energy. I drank it in, and the magic surged inside of me like a torrent of lightning. My brain spun across the world, into the stars, as it had when I pulled the life from the dragon. The understanding of the world crashed into me, and I knew the life and the power of every living entity on this planet. I felt them connect with the elements and channel through the radicals. I saw the radicals forging roads to other worlds with infinitely more and varied life. The creation of my universe was beautiful. I almost stopped my rampage to stare and gasp in wonder at what I had made. But I still wanted revenge. The fire emerged from my hands like a sticky purple tidal wave of death. It flooded the arena on all sides of the pyre, and thousands of Obarni and humans instantly burst into a wet flame as if they were walking wax fire starters. Iolarothi's body was gone. It was now part of the charcoal upon which I stood. Even the cross they had bound her to was twisted and bent against the colossal heat. My love was dead, and with her went any chance to find our daughter. My old friends had taken everything from me. I turned my attention back to the thousands of fleeing Obarni, and set another group of 100 ablaze with my limitless anger. The fire I stood upon was almost expired now. I had pulled all of its life and energy into me. My power would not fade until every last one of them was destroyed. I stepped from the mountain of charcoal to continue my revenge. The ground was awash in lava, but I walked through it. The fire knew I was its master. I was beyond the simple pains of the flesh now. The stadium was empty now. Thayer jumped toward me once I reached the arch marking the exit. My friend with the scarred nose was as quick as usual, but his sword stopped against my skull shield with a symphonic screech that seemed to echo across the entire city. I did not remember picking up my shield, but the heavy piece of metal glowed the same purple and green color as the fire that dripped from my skin like sweat. My mace was in my hand now as well, and I swung the devastating weapon at my friend's shaved head. He attempted to dodge it, but it seemed as if he moved through molasses, and the mace connected with his shoulder. Dozens of bones shattered, and his torso buckled beneath the attack. My leg instantly kicked forward, and the ball of my foot slammed into his chest. More of his ribs shattered, and the man who had once been my dearest friend tumbled away from me like a cast pebble. A stone building 100 yards away broke his uncontrolled roll, and the structure shattered like ice and then crumbled around his dead body. Gorbani led 20 of his armored warriors against me. They carried spears and shields decorated with various ram effigies. I considered destroying them with another wave of fire, but I wanted the satisfaction of feeling each of their bodies break under my mace. I sprinted toward them and leapt into the air right before I reached their spear range. My armored body landed at the edge of the squad, and two of the warriors' ram-helmeted heads imploded with a single swing of my mace. Before the rest could turn around, three more were dead, and I stood upon their twitching corpses. Spears were wonderful weapons for large-scale warfare or open spaces, but Gorbani's warriors had not expected me to get closer than lance length to them. By the time the remainder of the squad turned around and realized they needed to grab for their swords, the city street was awash with gallons of blood, and the dead at my feet numbered 16. I swung my mace a few more times, and only Gorbani was left standing before me. He blocked my first strike with his shield, and I felt his muscular arm break beneath the blow. He grunted in annoyance, but the pain didn't stop him from slashing at my legs with his heavy cavalry sword. My shield deflected this blow easily, and it felt almost as if a child was attacking me. I heard arrows twang against bowstrings, and I swung my shield behind me to block the volley of missiles Alexia and her warriors intended for my back. The arrows bounced off of my screaming death shield like angry rain. Half of her archers died when the rooftop they crouched upon burst into a giant ball of purple and green flame. Gorbani may have believed that I forgot about him, but I spun away from the vertical strike he aimed at my exposed back, and then I smashed my mace into his spine. The blonde man bent backward like a wet rag, and every single disc in his back exploded. He managed to gasp out a scream, but I did not care about his pain. He had killed Iola Rothi, and now the horseman was going to pay. I raised my mace and was about to bring it down on his helmet, but Malik stepped from the corner of the building I had just set on fire. He was with 10 of his warriors, and they raised their hands toward me in unison. I thought about diving out of the way, but I realized it would not matter. Nothing would stop me. I would kill all of them, especially Malik, then Alexia, then Gorbani. Then I would finish what I started with Shlara. Their magic swirled around me in a rainbow of oranges and reds. It should have burned me, but I pulled the power from it and felt my blood boil and surge with strength. Malik's soldiers then tasted my own purple fire as it consumed their souls. "You destroyed everything, Kyaer," Malik screamed at me. My armored hand closed around his throat, and his next words were lost. I thought about ripping the water out of his body, but I wanted to see him struggle for air while I squeezed the last bits of life from him. His hands pried at my gauntlet, and he reached for his dagger. The blade stabbed impotently at the screaming skulls etched into my armor. Alexia fell upon my arm from above, with her sword cleaving downward. My focus on Malik should have cost me the limb, but again I was saved by my armor. The blade could not penetrate the skull-encrusted plates, but the impact of her blow numbed my arm for a second, and Malik twisted out of my grip and sprinted away while Alexia spun her twin swords at me. She was an amazing swordswoman, and wielded her trademarked set of blades with a ruthless efficiency. She was a chaotic fighter, and often faded in and out of melee range with an acrobatic flip of her body. Though we had not sparred together often, I could anticipate her moves. Her swords aimed both high on my shoulder and then low toward my groin. My shield was large enough to deflect both, and then my mace swung around to smash her hip into liquid. She spun back away from me and flipped up into a handstand on her left hand. The blonde woman flicked her right fingers, and my shield slid in front of my face to block the four darts that she had perfectly aimed at the eye holes in my screaming skull armor. She bounced to her feet, and I feinted a mace strike. She was too far out of range anyway, but she took the bait and raised both of her swords to parry the attack. My right leg swept from her flank, and my shin made contact with the side of her left knee. The joint there broke, and she tumbled to the ground. Thayer had clawed his way from the ruins of the building under which I had buried him, and emerged from the dead with a scream of rage and a deadly swing of his blade aimed at me. My right arm almost broke when I caught the blow, and my boots slid back across the smooth stones of the roadway. His mouth was covered in foam, and his tunic with blood and ash. His sword strikes came in a frantic volley of attacks that I could do little more than block, and he succeeded in positioning himself in front of Alexia. Thayer could not keep up his frenzy for long. He was strong, and he was fast, but I knew his magic would not allow him to recover quickly enough from the stress he was causing himself with his rage and speed. I could not reach past him to finish Alexia, and he protected her just long enough for her leg to heal. She rose, and both of them came at me, their swords and eyes hungry for vengeance. Their blades simultaneously sought holes in my defense, but there were none. What my shield could not block, my weapon parried. What my mace could not deflect, scraped harmlessly off of my screaming demon armor. After half a minute of frenzied attacks, their blades had done nothing but sing their song of disappointment. Thayer had exhausted himself. He had not kept up the robust training regimen and discipline that he had during the war. His swings left his flank exposed. I slammed my mace into his ribs. He smiled as soon as I took the bait and dropped his weapon to grab my elbow. My left arm was tied up by his body, and Alexia threw herself onto my shield. Malik jumped down from the roof of a burning building, aiming the point of a lance at my face. I let go of my shield and flipped over Thayer's back before Malik's spear could hit. I lifted the bald man over my shoulders and bent my body backward to smash his bare head into the cobblestone street. His skull cracked with his spine and shoulders. He released his grip on my arms as his body went limp. Malik screamed something at me and then thrust his spear at the right side of my stomach. My armored hand deflected it slightly, but his aim was true, and the point of the weapon slammed into the left side of my muscles. The armor held against the point, but the handsome man's thrust was strong, and I felt a few of my ribs crack from the impact. They healed before he could manage another strike. My mace swung out, and Malik's right arm shattered like glass. I kicked at Alexia. The woman rolled away from the attack, but she left my shield behind. I slammed my foot on the edge of the heavy piece of metal when I brought my leg back. It sprung off the stone tiles of the street, and my hand grasped the leather straps to secure it back into the bulwark's rightful place on my right side. I felt the power from Gorbani's magic cascade down the street. It washed over me like a warm bath, and the flames obscured my vision for a few seconds. I jumped away from the heat and realized that it had given Alexia a chance to grab Thayer and sprint away from me. Purple fire danced down the path of cobblestones and melted the bricks of the homes and structures near us into a greenish soup. Alexia bore the muscular bald man on her back, and she slid around a corner, carrying her burden away before my magic could rip the life from both of them. Shlara's rest was burning green, orange, and purple now. Smoke filled the air like a noxious blanket, and the city echoed with the screams of its inhabitants trying to flee from the ravenous spread of my flames. I had killed tens of thousands of humans and Obarni, but I did not care. I wanted them all to feel my anguish over Iolarothi's death. They should have just let us go. Malik should have just given us the ovule and let us leave this world. The ovule. My anger suddenly stuck in my chest like a block of ice. I did not need to kill them. It would change nothing. My daughter was trapped, and I needed to find an ovule and save her, not waste time with futile revenge. Malik shoved his spear at me, and I knocked it aside with my shield, let my mace slide from my hand, and then slammed my armored head into his skull. The blow knocked him backward, and I yanked the spear from his unconscious hands. Then I spun on my back foot and threw the weapon toward Gorbani. It skewered him in the stomach before he could twist away, and he collapsed back on the burning street with a yelp of pain. I flipped the mace back into my hand, scanned the rooftops for signs of Thayer or Alexia, and then set off running through the torched streets. My mind was clear now, and I regretted the moments of insanity that had cost so many innocent lives. All that mattered now was doing what Iolarothi could not. I headed toward Malik's estate. Chapter 41. Kyair. I gasped awake and frantically examined my surroundings. I was cold, wet, and exhausted. My eyes adjusted to the darkness, and my mind grasped at the present through the fading fog of memories of the destruction I had wrought upon Shlara's rest. My daughter was on this world, but I had been banished. Tears filled my eyes, and I could not contain my sobs. They came unbidden, but after the first few racked my body, I didn't try to hold them back any more. I could still smell their blood and hear their screams. But the smell was fresh. The smell was not a memory. The screams were here. Voices shouted in the distance. My hands were covered in blood. My body was covered in blood. The reek of shit, organs, and rot surrounded me. The floor of the room was thick with elven corpses. They were like a twisted jigsaw puzzle. Bent and broken bodies filled every possible space. A faint glow permeated the stones of the radical, just enough to reveal the black, green, and red armor of the dead elvens. None moved. Was the Empress dead? Fehalda? Virnine? I could not remember anything that had happened after Talaxthi sent me through the radical. I expanded my hearing and picked up pieces of a frantic conversation outside of the temple. Elven voices were coordinating a defensive perimeter around the structure, in case I tried to escape. I did not remember killing all these elvens, but there was no other explanation. I exhaled with mixed relief and tried to find a dry spot on my tunic to wipe my bloody hands. I felt immense relief that I was still on this world, still conscious and alive. I just had to find the right radical, and I could awaken my daughter. If Nadia knew her name. That, an escape through the hundreds of elvens guarding this radical. I glanced at my hands again, and another memory buzzed into my brain like a hummingbird. I had worn the armor in Shlara's rest. I had worn it when I attempted to rescue my friends from Castle Naya. When Talaxthi used the ovule, I saw my armor on my hand just before my vision faded to white. I heard a woman's voice commanding troops outside. It sounded like Fehalda, but my headache made it hard to discern the voice or her words. Booted footsteps clomped above me, and I realized I had little time to devise a plan before I would be attacked again. I tried to remember what I had done to summon my armor, but the familiar pain returned to my skull, as it always did when I thought of certain parts of my past. It never accompanied thoughts of the war or my life with Iola Rothy. It came when I recalled the magic that existed beyond the common magic of the elements. There were plenty of weapons among the corpses, so I grabbed a sword and a metal shield. I jumped clear of the bodies and landed at the foot of the stairwell. It was a quick sprint up the stairs, and I crouched down so I could have a bit of cover while looking out of the radical. I heard armor moving around outside of the shrine, and the room was darkened in shadow for a half a second. There were eight of them, and they wore the black armor of Fahalda's warriors. From my position, I could only see 50 yards beyond the doorway before the trail turned out of view. "Talaxthi," I called out. There was an immediate silence. "Talaxthi," I called again. I had not seen the Empress's body downstairs. She must have escaped. They would have protected her at all costs. "What do you want, Kyair?" Fahalda's voice bounced into the room. She was farther up the path to my west. "I need to discuss terms with Talaxthi." "Terms of what?" Fahalda asked. "Surrender." "You are surrendering to us?" Her voice sounded sarcastic. "Or you may surrender to me. I will not wear my armor. I need to return to the castle." I doubted Talaxthi would agree to any sort of parley with me after what I had done, but I had to try. "No, Kyair, there will be no negotiations. My sister was correct to banish you. This radical will be your tomb." "I want peace. Please, let me speak to her." I sighed in frustration and wondered if there was another exit. Could I make it to Naya before the Empress's army? Even if I could, the castle would be filled with elvens, and it would be difficult to reach Nadia, especially without murdering more of Talaxthi's people. Even if I found her, I had no reason to believe she knew my daughter's name. I only had the vague hope that Iola Rothy had communicated it to her, finally, in a dream. Even if we knew her name, we would have to find the correct radical while evading the elvens. Bringing my daughter back here would expose her to danger. We would spend our lives in hiding. It was no life for a child, but it was a life. There was a chance, however small, that it would work. I had to try. I had nothing else. "We did send you through the radical. You returned a few minutes later, and then you set about killing us. You can see why we do not trust your promises of peace." Her words slammed into my throat like a punch to the esophagus. I did not recall experiencing the magic that sent me to the other world, and I certainly did not remember returning a few minutes later. "So what is your plan? Send more warriors in here to kill me? They will fail. I do not want to fight you anymore, but I will defend myself. We will continue until we succeed. Once we have ended you, we will hack your body to pieces and burn them separately. We will spread your ashes across this world. You will not return from that death. My generals could not kill me. I knew now why they called me the betrayer. There was something else that swam beneath the surface of my previous life, a truth my dreams knew, but my brain did not yet fully understand. I looked at my scarred left hand. My magic was strong, and my willpower was even stronger. I could not save Iola Rothy, but I had the power to atone for my sins by saving our daughter. My friends had not stopped me. They had only delayed me. I watched as the armor formed around my hand. Or maybe the armor was what really lay beneath my skin, my own bones. I had once been a man, but now I was something else. I was the ghost of Kyair's intentions, and now I would live forever. It did not matter. The armor, my shield, and my mace were as much a part of me now as my own bones, heart, and soul. I called them to my flesh, and they formed from their resting place. The pain of their embrace chilled me for a moment, but then I felt the familiar warmth of purpose and power they brought with them. 8 black-armored elven warriors ran into the room. The first 4 carried short spears, shields, and had swords at their hips. The last 4 carried stout crossbows. Their coordinated push into the shrine was seamless and fluid. At once the 4 with melee weapons attacked, while the pair of crossbow-wielding warriors unleashed their bolts. I stepped backward down the stairs and raised my shield to block the bolts. They hit it at an angle and ricocheted off of the stone walls of the radical. My arm went numb with the impact of the projectiles. Someone gasped in pain, but I did not have time to see if one of the bolts had found a new target before the spears were upon me. The stairs were wide enough to allow 3 of them to stand abreast, and they formed a shield wall to prevent me from working around them. Their spears danced out in a synchronized routine, and I lost ground while I tried to deflect the long strikes with my shield and mace. This group was exceptionally skilled, and I wondered if Fahalda had trained them specifically to fight me. But they were no Alexia, Gorbani, Malik, or Thayer. After a few of their strikes, I got the rhythm of their tactics and found a hole in their pattern. The woman on my right was slower than the other 2, and she was having a problem working the spear back against the curve of the stairway. Their strategy was sound as long as they could maintain their uniform wall and push me back with the spears. I guessed that once I reached the bottom of the stairs, the crossbows would have an opportunity to punch holes in my body. I knew my armor was strong, perhaps it was close to indestructible, but a wound crossbow bolt could dig into several feet of stone, and I did not want to risk testing the strength of my armor while my life hung as collateral. My foes pushed another cycle of their spear thrusts, and I leapt up a step instead of retreating. The woman's eyes betrayed no surprise, and I wondered if the entire strategy had been a feint. She could not pull her point back around quick enough, and I smashed my mace into her exposed arm. The bones shattered under her armor, and then I spun my body around to slam my screaming shield into the elven in the center. It meant that I briefly turned my back to the first woman, but she would have to drop her spear to pull out the sword at her hip. The middle elven flew to the side and smashed into his partner. The 4th was in the back of the trio, and I predicted he would make the poor decision of trying to thrust his spear into my right side instead of falling back up the stairs a few steps to ensure that I did not get to his crossbow support. My guess was correct. I thrust my hips back and bucked into the spear woman behind me. It pushed her up against the wall, and I felt her right hand close around the shorter left horn of my helmet. It was another risky movement, but the spear intended for my stomach grazed harmlessly past, and I dug the tip of my shield against the back of the man a few steps above me. Then I pulled my right arm inward and thrust my hips forward, pushing the man across me and down the stairs into the other 2 elvens. They fell into a tangle of armor, shields, and short spears for a second. I kicked the ass of the nearest elven, and they all tumbled down the winding steps. The woman hanging on my back tugged at the horn on my helmet, and I felt her other hand drop her shield. She was going for a dagger, so I slammed my head back into the wall once, twice, and a third time before I felt her armor smash and her skull split with a wet pop. The crossbows were at the top of the stairs, and I heard the twang of their bolts being released before I could summon magic to incinerate them. I did get my shield up in time, but the impact of the projectiles shattered the bones in my right arm and knocked me down the stairs. We were almost to the bottom of the steps, so I did not fall far. I was fortunate that the elvens below me had not set their spears or even gotten to their feet. I landed on the 3 like a falling boulder and heard one of their spines snap. Then I killed the other 2 with quick swings of my mace. I heard the crossbows reset up the stairwell, and I realized that trying to assault them from my current position would be suicide. Instead, I filled my body with earth and unleashed my purple and green fire up the stairs. It filled the spiraling corridor like a chimney of lava, and four voices screamed before they died. 8 elvens dead. Only a few hundred left. The steps had melted under my fire, and were still cooling from the hot, liquid glass they had become. I should not have used my magic in such close quarters, but it would have been even more treacherous to fall back and try to defend the stairwell from below. I had few choices. My prospects were grim. I did not feel the same surge of infinite power as I had in my most recent memory. I needed a better plan than just killing small groups of warriors and hoping Talaxthi would run out of troops or grow weary of sending them to die. They would never accept my surrender now, and the more corpses I left piled at my feet, the less likely it would be that they would believe my promises of peace. "Talaxthi," I shouted out again once I made it to the top of the stairs. "Stop sending your people to die. I want peace." "Shut up and die, Kyair," Fahalda screamed. I ducked back down the stairs, and the room filled with enough fire to roast an entire dragon. The heat was intense, and though I was not in the direct path of their magic, I would have burned to a crisp had I not been able to pull some of the energy from the flame and fill my own body with power. "I will surrender," I shouted after the scorching heat settled. "I will use the radical to leave." There was silence outside for a few moments, and I grew impatient. "I need an ovule. If we give you an ovule, you will leave?" "I will leave through this radical," I clarified, and prayed that they did not press the question. There was murmuring outside, but I could not discern their whispered words. "Fine. Be gone from this world, Kyair." I heard feet approach the door, and a leather satchel was set at the entryway. I exhaled in relief, and felt cold sweat trickle down my back beneath my armor. As I intended to trick them, I assumed they were doing the same. I stepped out of the stairwell and moved to the darkest side of the wall. My armor was finely crafted, but it was still over 70 pounds of plated steel, and I could not move in complete silence. When I made it halfway across the room, I took another deep breath to steady my nerves and dove for the leather sack. As I expected, dozens of crossbows sang out, but none found a home in my flesh. The satchel contained an ovule, and I sighed in relief. "I am sorry, Fahalda. Please pass my apologies to your sister." "Just leave." She was furious. Talaxthi must have left. The Empress would never have believed me. Now I just had to get the radical to reveal its secrets before Fahalda sent more warriors. I wasted no time dashing down the melted stairs and into the room carpeted in dead elvens. I set the ovule in its place on the dais and tried to focus my mind. The walls of the radical began to glow in the spiderweb pattern, and I smiled under my helmet. I rested my gauntlets on top of the sphere and wondered if I needed bare skin to use the device or if the ovule could send me to another radical on the same world. I pulled earth into myself instead of pushing the magic into the orb. The knowledge of the radicals struck me like a memory that had always been in my mind. There were 5 on this world, and I knew where they were and where they led. My consciousness expanded outside of the gray-green walls of the radical where I stood. I saw the hundreds of elven warriors who lay in wait to murder me, clad in deadly black and red armor. Another radical in the distant Northlands was also heavily guarded by elven soldiers. In the far east, past Loshur, in the land Pog had called Astakal, a radical was nestled high in the desert mountains, far beyond the reach of any human. There was no life for hundreds of miles in either direction. The fourth was deep in the caverns under Naya's castle. The leather pack holding the other ovule was still waiting where I had left it many months ago when I had journeyed through the dark place with Graykin, Danor, and the other Naya soldiers. Nadia's radical was deep in the Teeth Mountains, concealed behind a dense forest that guarded a steep valley. The radical sat upon the edge of a large crystal-clear pond of glacier water. It was a peaceful place, secluded and secret. I could understand why Beltor had been unable to find it again, but I could. This was where my daughter had been sent. All I needed now was her name, and an ovule to power the magic that could bring her to me. Fortunately, both the knowledge and the ovule were in Naya's castle. If I could figure out how to get this ovule to send me there instead of another world, I would have a few weeks' lead time on Telaxthi. Even if Nadia did not know the name of my daughter, I would have escaped the Elvens. I could work with Nadia, and maybe we could decipher her dreams together. I heard footsteps above me and gritted my teeth. Send me to this radical. I realized I did not need to speak the words aloud. I pictured the radical under Naya's castle and felt a warm pulse beneath the armor in my hands. I tied my mace to my armored belt and then lay on the nearest stone bed. I cradled my shield on my chest and then breathed another nervous sigh. There were six radicals on this world. I had not found the one that sent me here. The footsteps were closer now, at least a dozen. Fuck. There was no time to think about a sixth radical. I needed to get through this one. I almost got up and prepared for battle, but my armor started to feel warm. The room spun, and my vision changed from darkness to bright yellow light, as if I was staring directly into the sun, or the base of a fire, or the creation of life. Then, I traveled through the radical.
Chapter 42. Iolarathi.
Why didn't you tell him her name?
I opened my eyes against the pain, but it was gone. There was no heat, no flame, no angry, screaming O'Barney. There was nothing here but a small, strange human staring up at me. And a thousand floating islands. What? I gasped out. My breath tasted of smoke, but the world tasted of fertile earth, water, and wet tropical leaves.
Why didn't you tell him her name? You could have solved a lot of problems with one word.
He smirked and shrugged his thin shoulders. The human was old, mostly bald, with long, twisting wisps of white hair scattered across his liver-spotted head. The same white hair grew from his chin in ugly patches. His scent was surprisingly young and familiar.
Where am I? Where do you want to be?
He stopped smiling, and I stared into his eyes. They were the same color as mine, and the sight confused me even more.
Am I dead? Is that the last moment you remember?
He held a cane of bamboo.
I was chained to a piece of metal, and the O'Barney burned me.
I looked at my hands, and then down at the rest of my body. I wore the dear leather clothes that Viarathi and I made a few years ago.
Ah, yes, I am glad that you remember that. So now does my question make sense?
He nodded his head like an owl. My eyes narrowed at the little human. I did not have a sword, but I felt strong enough to kill. This man did not look like one of the O'Barney, but even if he was, I could kill one of them without a weapon.
No. Why didn't you tell Kyaer Viarathi's name?
I felt like he slapped ice water in my face. How do you know her name? My jaw clenched.
Maybe if you answer my question, I will answer yours.
He grinned. I felt my anger rise to an uncontrollable rage. I stepped toward the man and drove my palm into his nose with enough force to snap a tree in half. He was surprisingly quick. I could hardly see him shift out of the way of my strike. This asshole must have been an O'Barney. My elbow jabbed toward him, but was met with empty air as the old man ducked. He crouched on the ground like a monkey, and I spun my left leg around to take his head off with a shin kick. The sprightly man dodged by jumping backward into a handspring that I would never have imagined someone so small could execute. He was definitely an O'Barney. I pivoted my back leg and thrust my front foot out toward the small human. It was a solid kick aimed at his chest, and it should have connected with enough force to shatter his ribcage. It would not kill an O'Barney, but I would at least have the satisfaction of hearing his body break around my strike. He was gone. It was as if the man had vanished as soon as my foot approached him.